How language might have sounded 7,000 years ago. Today on UK Perspectives, I'm Tom Goodell. Andrew Bird teaches linguistics at UK, and he's recently been searching for the ancient roots of Latin, Greek, and even our own language, Old English, which has led him to an even older language, Proto-Indo-European, the sound of which we'll hear in just a moment. Welcome to UK Perspectives, Dr. Bird.
Thank you very much.
So what got you interested in tracing language back not only before Indo-European, which a lot of us have already heard of, but you went back even before the dawn of recorded history. So what got you interested in that?
Absolutely. Well, it all goes back to college when I started taking Latin. And at the same time, I started taking Greek as well, and I started noticing that there are all sorts of words in these languages that were basically identical. So the word for I, that is me, the personal pronoun, in Latin is ego. The word for I in Greek is ego. The word for father in both languages is pater. And so I saw this pattern. I said, this is incredible. And so I started taking more and more languages and recognizing all these similarities in these languages.
Now, Proto-European comes from where? Where did people speak Proto-Indo-European first?
So Proto-Indo-European was spoken likely just to the north of the Black Sea, as well as the Caspian Sea.
So would this be around Yalta or the Ukraine, that area?
Yeah, thereabouts. And I just want to point out that this is very controversial. It's one of the most controversial things within Indo-European studies. Most linguists think that they originated from there because of the vocabulary that we can reconstruct for that language. So, for example, we can reconstruct the word for snow, which was snegwa. We can reconstruct the word for beaver, which was bebros, and things like that. And so if you look at all these words, thousands of words, you can figure out where these guys live. So it's clear that they didn't live in the Bahamas, for example, because they knew about snow. Now, archaeologists, on the other hand, a lot of archaeologists, beginning with Colin Renfrew, think that they actually originated out of Anatolia. But most linguists disagree with that because of these items that we can reconstruct for Proto-Indo-European.
And how do you go about reconstructing the sound of the language? How do you take a modern word or 20 different versions of a modern word and say, well, the real root of this is X? How do you do that?
Well, so modern is a very fluid term. So let's say attested. By attested, we mean that it's actually written down or actually recorded. So in English, we've got the sound R. Now, R in English, if a word containing R goes back to Proto-Indo-European, the sound in Proto-Indo-European was not like our R, an American R, but it was more like a trilled R within Spanish, which I actually can't make myself.
I can't do that either.
It's very hard. At any rate, we think it was like that because the most ancient Indo-European languages, Sanskrit, and Latin and Greek seem to have had that type of R. Now, that's one way that we can reconstruct it. We can compare these languages and figure out how these things sounded like the actual attested languages. But another way that we can figure it out, and this is actually my specialty, is we look at how modern languages exist today, not just Indo-European languages, but all languages, and say, okay, if a language has this type of sound, what other sounds are likely to occur within that language? So, for example, when we hear the text later on, we'll hear sounds like buh, duh, guh, which are called voice aspirated stops. And languages with those types of sounds are likely to have the sound huh, that is RH. And so we can infer that an H existed within Proto-Indo-European as well.
Are there any words in Proto-Indo-European that we would recognize? If you just said the word, we'd say, oh, of course, that's
sure. My favorite actually is the word for water, which was pronounced, this was, again, 7,000 years ago, was pronounced probably like someone from Savannah, Georgia would say the word for water, is water.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And if you look at Hittite, which is a language that's Indo-European, attested about 3,000 years ago, the word for water was wadar. So, yeah, there's certainly very striking examples like that. Now, most of them are a little hidden, though. You have to know the prehistory of English and Germanic to figure out that this word was, in fact, a Proto-Indo-European word.
Now, you've posted on the internet a couple of examples of Proto-Indo-European, and you mentioned before that posting has gone viral. So talk a little bit about that first.
It's been kind of crazy. So this was a project that I did for Archaeology Magazine, and this was through knowing David Anthony, who's an archaeologist up in Connecticut. And so they asked that I read two fables. One is called Schleicher's Fable. It was written about 150 years ago, otherwise known as The Sheep and the Horses. And the other fable is called The King and the God. And this is actually a Proto-Indo-European variant of a Sanskrit fable. So I recorded these things back in August. And once they were posted, they went insanely viral. They were picked up by io9.com, Reddit, and then Huffington Post picked it up, and then the BBC. And right now, about 650,000 listens have happened since they were posted about 2 months ago.
Which is pretty amazing for a language that's over 7,000 years
absolutely.
Old.
Absolutely. And it's been wonderful exposure for my field as well.
Well, we'll put that link on WKY.org too. But now I'd like to hear some examples. So what does Proto-Indo-European sound like?
Okay, so this is the fable called The King and the God, or Rex Devos Que. The translation for what I'm about to read is, once there was a king, he was childless. The king wanted a son. He asked his priest, may a son be born to me. Okay. Rex hest, so mput los. Rex such num wunchto. Tos yo geotum prex. Such nus moi gunyatod.
You mentioned that some people said that sounds like a combination of German and Klingon.
Yeah, that's actually a fairly common reaction. All these guttural sounds, these sounds made in the back of the throat towards the pharynx and the uvula, those are sounds that are very common within Klingon as well as languages like Arabic. So that's a very common reaction.
So how confident are you if you were put in a time machine and you went back 5,000, 7,000 years to Yalta and that area,
right.
Do you think people would understand you?
I would be surprised if they didn't get part of what we just said, though I'd be very surprised if we were 100% correct. Note that our view of Proto-Indo-European is highly skewed. We only have the data that we have. We've got the data from the most successful languages, that is the languages of these empires, the Greek Empire and the Roman Empire and things like that.
And those languages weren't written down for several centuries.
Absolutely. So this, I mentioned earlier, this language likely goes back to 7,000 years ago, and the first Indo-European languages were written about 3,000 to 3,500 years ago. So there's a lot of time difference in between. But that said, I'd be very surprised if the word for king, this first word of the text, rex, I'd be very surprised if it weren't something like that. We see this root in Latin rex, as in our word regal and things like that. We see this in Old Irish re. We see this in German Reich, which means kingdom. And so all of these things point back to something that looked like rakes. So I would be surprised if it were 100% correct, but I would also be surprised if they didn't understand at least part of what I said. Now, of course, you have to keep in mind that when I read these things, I've got an American accent, right? I'm not a native speaker of Proto-Indo-European, so they'd also have to take that into consideration.
Well, what's next? Can you go back even further in time? This is Proto-Indo-European, so this is not the original language that was spoken. It's a later language. Can you go back farther?
You can, and many people have tried, though the majority of historical linguists think that the methodology is a bit flawed. There are certainly some people who believe in something called Nostratic, and that is a combination of Finno-Ugric, so languages like Finnish, as well as other language families combined together with Indo-European. And I certainly am sympathetic to the view. I think that certainly something existed before Proto-Indo-European, something that is the source of all these languages. There's some very striking correspondences between these languages. So, for example, the first-person singular marker, that is the marker for me, in many of these languages, verbal paradigms and nominal paradigms, that is verb and noun paradigms, is an M. And if you look at all the Indo-European languages, M marks the first person singular. So perhaps there's something going on there. But unfortunately, there's so much noise in the situation that it's very hard to know what's real and what's a fabrication. So if what I'm saying right here for Proto-Indo-European is not 100% accurate, how can we know that what we do, say, 10,000 years before that is going to be accurate? Now, that's going to be, I imagine, much, much less accurate.
Well, thank you. Our guest has been Dr. Andrew Bird, and you can hear more samples of him reading fables in Proto-Indo-European at our website, wuky.org, where you'll also hear our complete interview. For WUKY, I'm Tom Goodell.